Thank you for tuning in to Mingling with Mino, where I mingle with and motivate the masses. I'm your host, Ramino, aka Mino, and you are now mingling with me. Before we start today's episode, I'd actually like to thank Jaime Contreras. He is a wonderful member of the faculty and staff here at the Illinois Media School. Thank you, Jaime, for connecting me with Ambrose for today. You are amazing, and I hope to continue working with you. Also, I would like to take a moment to remember my Papa Clifton Patterson. He was a wonderful soul. He was a wonderful father figure, and it was just disappointing just to see him go. You will be truly missed, Papa Cliff. Thank you for tuning in to Mingling with Mino, where I mingle with and motivate the masses. My name is Ramino, aka Mino, and you are now mingling with me. And so today, I'm actually mingling with a friend. His name is Ambrose Contreras, and he is a comedian. So what we're going to talk about today with my fellow minglers is just a little bit about how we are mingling with Ambrose. Yeah, so Ambrose, how you doing today?
I'm good. Doing really good. How about you?
I am doing really well. Doing well in this wonderful city, the third largest city in America, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. So kind of tell us about yourself. So Ambrose, where are you from?
So originally I am from here in Chicago, technically born in Evanston, Illinois, and then we moved to Chicago when I was little. And then when I was a teenager, we moved out to the Pacific Northwest, and I've kind of been there for the past 15 years.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, 15 years?
Yep.
Oh, my Lord. So what part of the Pacific Northwest? What part?
So I currently reside in Seattle.
Okay.
But I have also lived in Tri-Cities, Washington.
Oh, awesome.
And then also La Grande, Oregon.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I've never been to Washington or Oregon, so. Yeah, and I actually, it's funny that you say Evanston, because I actually live on the border of Evanston.
Okay.
Here in Chicago, so I actually go into Evanston a lot. Yeah, via the Purple Line, so, yeah.
Gotcha, cool.
Yeah.
They have a Purple Line now.
Oh, that's in good. Seattle? Or?
No, I mean here, because when we left, they didn't have, I don't think they had the Purple Line, and I don't think they had the Pink Line either.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Pink Line, that goes out west, that goes towards like the, I think Cicero?
Yeah, because because the Blue Line used to go in three directions.
Yeah.
And the Pink Line took one of those directions.
What?
Yeah.
See, and I've only been in Chicago for 2.5 years, so I wouldn't have known any of that. Yeah. So thank you for letting me know.
Right.
Yeah. So you say that you currently reside in Washington.
Yes.
How is Washington?
You know, it's a lot different than here. It's sort of a mesh between being like its own little weird queer bubble.
Yeah.
But also like on the other extreme of that too.
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends where you are in the state.
Uh-huh.
The east side of the state is definitely more conservative. The west and it's dry heat there, and it's basically an arid desert. The west side of the state is very rainy and mountainous and tons of trees. But then that's like the liberal side of the state.
And you know what's so funny is that I feel like on the East Coast, or probably not just the East Coast, probably like multiple areas in the US, it's actually the opposite. The East part is actually more of the liberal part. The Western part is more so conservative. I know like in Virginia, where I'm originally from, it's kind of like that. I'm from Virginia Beach. So in Virginia Beach, it's a little bit more liberal. And then like when you go towards the western part, towards like the mountains, that's where it becomes a little bit more conservative. You know, like heavily like Christian, and you know, so yeah, that's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Seattle is definitely, it's very secular and atheist, and there's a lot of like Wiccans and stuff there. So it's kind of like sort of cool, because they have a bunch of, everybody's got their own small business over there.
Oh, wow.
So there's tons of shops like that sell crystals, and then like tons of like bookshops that sell like all sorts of religious books, like from every single religion, even the ones you haven't heard of yet, type thing. So it's pretty like diverse and like open like that. And there's no dominant religion there.
Okay. Interesting. So, yeah. Okay, I might need to book a ticket to Seattle then one day. You know, I definitely want to see, like, just how the culture is different from, you know, say, Chicago or even where I'm from in Virginia Beach. And it would be just so interesting for me to, you know, just visit, I guess, like, the opposite of what, you know, in a way of what I'm used to.
Right.
Awesome. Okay, awesome. Now, as I said before, you're a comedian. So how is being a comedian? Like, what are some of the elements of, you know, your comical journey, if you will, that kind of stand out most to you?
So I would say it promotes me to be a more avid writer. I've been interested in writing ever since I could write, basically. Yeah. When I was 9 or 10, I would write poems a lot. I started writing kind of like prose and short stories when I got a little older. So now, like, just with the whole writing jokes, I am always writing jokes now. Even when I'm in the car, like driving to school, driving to work, like I am always writing jokes and reciting them out loud. And I definitely talk to myself a whole lot more now, because I'm always trying to figure out, okay, here's the joke I'm trying to make. What's the point of the joke? Where can I cut the fat? Where can I make it hit quicker? Right. And stuff like that. So I'm always workshopping. So it's like my brain never goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely a big part of it. And then another huge part of being a comedian is networking.
Yeah.
I'm always networking. Anytime I go to a open mic night, always networking, always meeting new comedians. I always make sure to stay to the very end so I can approach everybody and just introduce myself, or, you know, kind of give each other feedback and stuff. Like, hey, I really liked this joke. Maybe you want to rework it this way, and just all sorts of like I said, all sorts of networking.
That's awesome. And that actually sounds similar to what I have to do as a podcaster. So I actually have to do a lot of networking. It's mainly social media networking. So, you know, going to different groups and just kind of mingling with and interacting with those people that kind of have like similar interests, similar content. And I feel like with a comedian, I don't know if people realize this, but they are content creators. You know what I mean? Because like with those jokes, you know, obviously you're gonna have to do like research, you know, in a way, whether it be like interacting with fellow comedians, or, you know, interacting with just people that, you know, are interested in comedy, you know, and kind of work that into your content. So yeah, you're a content creator in the making.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Definitely.
So, now, as far as kind of going a little deeper into, you know, you being a comedian, what kind of sparked that interest in being a comedian? So what were some of the, you know, like events kind of leading up to you starting your career as a comedian?
So I would say a huge part of it, was just my upbringing. So, like my dad, he's Mexican, and he really tried to raise myself and my siblings to be proud of our heritage, even amongst a bunch of racism towards the Mexican community. And so what he would do is he would expose us to musicians and actors and actresses and directors and comedians who were Mexican or some sort of other Latinx culture. So I just remember when the George Lopez sitcom first came out, we had never heard of George Lopez before.
Oh, wow.
And so my dad did some research and found some CDs of his sets, and he brought it home, and he's like, we're going to learn about George Lopez now because he's a Mexican and he's a comedian and he's successful at it. And so I just remember being exposed to that. And George Lopez content wasn't very kid friendly.
Of course.
My dad did not know that when he bought it, but we kind of just listened to it anyways. And, you know, so whenever there was a joke that was maybe a little bit out of my age range, my dad would kind of be like, just ignore that one. So that was a huge part of my introduction to stand-up comedy. Because before that, my other introduction to stand-up comedy was Jerry Seinfeld through the Seinfeld Show, because I would watch the reruns on it all the time on Fox. So that definitely sparked the interest in stand-up comedy. And then as I got older, just dealing with things like bullying or teachers kind of just being racist towards me because I was Mexican, the way that I coped with that was comedy. So I would start making, you know, smart remarks to people. Sometimes they would laugh and other times they'd just get madder because they'd be like, you're such a smart aleck, like, shut your mouth type thing. But I definitely found joy in seeing the comedy in maybe not so much tragic situations, but in difficult situations. And so then as I got older, I started slowly exposing myself to other stand-up comedians. And then the event very recently that really sparked me to want to be a comedian was I was feeling really low one day, just really upset, and I'm like, I need to laugh. So I put on and I watched 8 hours of Gabriel Iglesias, just his stuff.
What?
And I had exposed myself to him before, actually through my dad, who told me about him. Hey, have you heard of this one? And then I started exposing myself to Gabriel Iglesias. And so after watching 8 hours, at the end of that, I noticed a few things about his comedy, is that a lot of the times he will tell life stories about himself and he'll like sneak jokes in between that. But overall, like, the message of the entire set will be a specific message of like, I make mistakes, but I recover from them. Or, you know, I've dealt with racism, but here's where I am now type thing. And so I've noticed that, and I loved his writing style and how he puts those sets together. And I thought, I'm an experienced writer. I can do this. And I know enough of stand-up comedy that I can do this. So that's kind of like where that all came together.
And it's just so interesting just to see how you kind of found that interest just through, you know, those life experiences. Because I feel like when people think of comedy, they think of, you know, somebody getting up on stage and, you know, just trying to make someone laugh or just make a huge audience laugh. And I feel like people don't think about some of the things that go behind the scenes of a comedian, you know. So they think that, you know, again, it's just, you know, all about that comic relief, you know, and being able to just make a crowd laugh. And they don't realize that there's a whole bunch of content creation that goes with that, coming from whether it be your life experiences or education, or just any element of, you know, who you're trying to be as an individual going into your work. And I feel like that's actually what I like about some of the pieces of work. So whether it be comedy, whether it be, you know, books, or, you know, hearing somebody speaking publicly to the masses, you know, I like to see how people can incorporate some of the things that they might have experienced, or, you know, some of the things that they might have read, and, you know, just to supplement their knowledge so that it'll flow, you know, together into their work. So that's awesome. Awesome, awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I know that we were also talking a little bit earlier about you being transgender, female to male. Can you tell us a little bit about that? So I guess, like, when I say that, my first question, which I feel like a lot of people ask this, but, you know, I'm gonna just go ahead and ask, when did you find out that you were transgender?
So, much like many transgender people, I knew ever since I was little. And it was one of those things where I constantly had moments where I would look at my parents, and I would look at one, And I'd look at my mom and go, okay, cool, that's my mom. And then I would look at my dad and be like, okay, cool, that's my dad. And then when I started thinking about myself growing up, I just assumed, well, I'm going to grow up to look like this one, my dad. And that, like, there was no hesitation in that thought ever when I was a kid. I saw myself and was like, I'm growing up to look like that. That's just what's going to happen. And then, of course, I was kind of devastated to find out, no, that's not the parent I'm going to grow up to look like. I'm going to grow up to look like the other one because of how I was born. And I didn't understand that. And I remember that that really confused me. And because of my highly religious upbringing, I wasn't really allowed to express the masculinity in me that was just there naturally. And so it took quite a few years. And I found small ways to express it here and there. But it wasn't until I was 25 that I openly came out and then changed my name and then started testosterone.
Oh, wow. Now, how old are you now, if you don't mind?
I am 30.
Oh, wow. So 5 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's amazing. And now, how does that kind of translate into your role as a comedian? So how do your experiences with going through being transgender, how does that reflect in your work as a comedian?
Well, in a few ways. For one, I've noticed very quickly that there aren't many other transgender comedians. There are some, but I have met some local ones, but they mostly gravitate towards specific venues to perform, whereas I kind of go a little bit of everywhere. Unfortunately, sort of like I was saying before, Seattle is kind of a very like queer bubble, but at the same time, there's some places you want to go and some places you don't want to go. And I have noticed just in the queer community, in the LGBTQIA+ community in Seattle, there's specific like bars or cafes that say, hey, we're only going to book LGBTQIA and female comedians or performers or whether it's like a poetry slam night or an open mic night for music or an open mic night for comedy. There are like specific ones that only cater to that crowd. And because of that, that crowd only will go to those specific venues. They don't really branch out as much. So I don't run into them unless I go to a specifically queer place.
Gotcha.
And so I'm sort of experiencing this weird culture of being amongst cisgendered males and mostly cisgendered white males, comedians. And I'm noticing, you know, the subject matters of their jokes are a little bit more on the edgelord comedy side. And so that's very different because when I get on stage, I don't go for the edgelord. I go for the more personal and I go for the more educational type jokes. So I'm definitely like, I'll get those laughs, but they're different types of laughs than what everybody else is getting. And so I often too experience, and I don't know if it's specific prejudice towards me because I am trans, but I will get comments from other comedians, you know, saying things like, you know, you really shouldn't get too personal, or, you know, like, you know, I don't really understand this story, or like what was up with that joke, or even saying things like, well, you can get away with this type of joke, but I can't because I'm not trans or whatever. And sometimes I go, well, what does that mean? So there's like all of these weird assumptions that I'm experiencing, and I'm sure as I start to like move forward and hopefully eventually start getting booked for longer sets, I'll probably experience some of that of people either not wanting to book me because I'm trans or wanting to book me because I'm trans. So in many ways, like, there definitely will be a balance of doors opening and doors closing for me at the same time.
Right. And it's just so interesting how with with comedy or with any medium, when you communicate to the masses, you know, it just is definitely interesting to see all of these constraints, like race, like sexuality, like, you know, your gender, you know. And I feel like even though people say that in 2021 we're very progressed, which I think, you know, in my opinion, we are progressed, you know, in relation to the 1960s or the 1970s, right? We definitely have come a long way as far as our progression, but it just still is very interesting to me how some of these constraints, like race, like your sexuality, they're constraints to our success and, you know, our overall personal growth. Whether or not we're trying to mingle with the masses or mingle with, you know, a couple of people, I feel like it just definitely is interesting to kind of see how those factors can, you know, inhibit your success, you know. And so with that being said, I guess I want to ask you, how do you plan on overcoming some of those obstacles? Like, what are some of the things that you're already doing, or what are some of the things that you plan on doing in order to kind of overcome those barriers and fulfill your that process of being a comedian?
I would say a big part of my plan would be the way that I network. So I'm overall, like, I would say that I'm a pretty friendly person. And I am pretty outgoing too, and I think that will work in my favor, because I will approach anybody, even if I didn't like your jokes, I will still come up to you and say hi and shake your hand. And, you know, if I'm going out for a cigarette and I know you smoke cigarettes, I'll offer you one, and then I'll go outside and I'll just have a conversation. We don't need to talk about jokes. We can talk about anything. Like, no subject is off the table for me ever. And I think that openness and that willingness to talk to people completely different from me will keep me in their minds. So when they're ready to book people, they know, hey, Ambrose is actually a really nice guy and maybe I should give him a chance. And that's kind of been my strategy in everything that I've ever done. Because I've gone through quite a few other, like, long-term hobbies as well, and that's always been my approach, and I've always figured it out as I went. So I think that'll be a big part. Another strategy for me is I actually have turned to the internet and started making videos of my jokes, and that's, for me, is a means to reach people that aren't even local to Seattle and to just reach kind of everybody. And, you know, get my face out there, get my voice out there, so people, you know me before they even see me in person. And that might also, like, put my voice and my face in people's minds from maybe across the country, maybe, like, all the way over here, maybe in Florida, maybe in Texas or wherever, you know.
Awesome. Yeah. Now, so what are some of your projects outside of being a comedian? So, because I know that with being a comedian, like, are you doing it full time, or do you have any other projects that you're working on? Or and they don't have to be extravagant projects, right? You know, because what one thing that I tell my fellow minglers is that personal growth, it doesn't mean that you have to become famous, or, you know, you have to let the whole entire world know about, you know, what you're doing to better yourself or what you're doing to evolve as a human being. What are some of, you know, the projects that you're working on, whether it be, you know, grandiose or just stuff close to home? Can you share that with us?
Yeah, so I'm a pretty busy person. I do the comedy thing, but that's pretty part-time. I try to hit up open mic night once or twice a week. Aside from that, I'm also a roller derby coach for junior roller derby. So that's ages 8 to 17. Oh, wow. So I do that once a week. When there are games, or bouts, as they call them, I actually announce for the games. So I'm an announcer. Prior to being a coach, I actually did play adult derby myself for 7 years.
Awesome.
So I kind of transitioned into coaching because I was done destroying my body and my knees. Because you fall a lot in that sport. And so you're going to hurt yourself. I did get 3 concussions from playing for those 7 years that I played.
Man.
So I think I'm done with concussions. I do coach now, and that's a lot of fun. And then I actually am putting myself through school right now. I am studying behavioral health, and my goal eventually is to be both a grief counselor and an LGBTQIA youth counselor.
That is amazing, and I'm glad that you said behavioral health, because I actually have my bachelor's in psychology, and I actually have been in the mental health field for about 6 years. So I've done case management as well as mental health counseling. And so pretty much I've worked with people with, you know, bipolar disorder, with schizophrenia. Schizophrenia definitely in Chicago. You know, and I feel like that's something that we definitely need to raise more awareness in. You know, and I feel like with my work, it's just so interesting to see how I get to put kind of just a piece of my advocacy. You know, with every time that I go into work and I, you know, see my residents, you know, I might not be thinking in the moment that I'm doing something impactful. However, you know, after I leave every night, I definitely, because I ride the train, you know, I ride transit. So that gives me a great opportunity to kind of reflect on how I'm advocating for other people, you know, and it's just so significant, especially here in Chicago. It definitely is just significant to see, like, just how different it is as far as with mental health mm-hmm. and the need. You're dealing with, again, the third largest city in America. So, you know, that's the third largest market, I feel like, for people with mental illness.
Yeah.
Now, how does behavioral health or mental illness kind of relate to you, whether it be in your personal growth efforts or you as a comedian? Can you kind of tell us about that?
Yeah, so I actually lived for a very long time not diagnosed, and I do struggle with mental illnesses. 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia. The very fun thing, fun in quotations, as I'm sure you already know, when you have both bipolar and schizophrenia, they sort of do a fusion and they make schizoaffective disorder.
Yes.
So one of the jokes that I make in my comedy set is that they do the Dragon Ball Z fusion dance together in your head. So I have found, just from going to mental hospitals, you know, having to commit myself into mental hospitals, and then just going through therapist after therapist after therapist. Unfortunately, there's a huge turnover in therapists, at least in Washington State. I don't know about the numbers for other states in the U.S., but in Washington State, the average is to have about one therapist a year. And I have been through COVID, I've been through 4 therapists now. And so I am finding that just mental health care is not at its best at all. People are, you know, having to change therapists constantly. They're having to go on and off their medication because of either pill shortages, or insurance changes, lapse in insurance, and just all of these things. Also in Seattle, there's a large, large number of rates of homelessness. And a lot of those people have schizophrenia. So just mental health in general, it's a very, very important topic to me. It's just close to home. And I feel like, you know, having lived through all of these things just sort of makes me not an expert by any means on mental illness, but it makes me more empathetic towards other people who are struggling with mental illness. And, you know, I just kind of, I feel like I have this extra sense of just wanting to be there for someone else, because I know how much it means when someone else is there for me. And so something that I do is I very often will kind of tell my friends and inform them, like, hey, I just found out this fun fact about schizophrenia or any other disorder, even like either ones that I have or maybe ones that a close friend or a family member has. And so I always try to read up on them. I have bought my own DSM now, so I kind of make tabs in it and underline and just like flip through, and I'll just go through different disorders because I really believe that just education on mental illness is just so important, and it's an important step to understanding and also being empathetic towards other people who are suffering or living with it. So something I do with my comedy, sort of my like mission statement for my comedy, is to educate while making people laugh. So it's a learn and laugh experience. I openly will just, I'll just get on stage and I'll just admit, like one of the first phrases out of my mouth will be like, I have schizophrenia. Here we go. I'm gonna take you on a journey now. Like, and kind of just standing up and being able to just say that I have it to a room full of strangers is a very odd feeling of just accomplishment. Like, I feel like I've just, you know, conquered so many demons in my head just by admitting it and by opening that conversation. And several times after telling my jokes about having schizophrenia, I've had members of the audience come up to me and have an open dialogue with me about it and ask me details and just be like, I don't know enough about this. How does this work? How does that work? What are hallucinations like? What's delusions like? Can you give me some examples? And I even had one woman come up to me and do a mental check-in with me. I didn't know her before, but here she was coming up to me asking me, what kind of medication are you on? Are you taking it regularly? And do you have a good therapist right now? And do you need any resources? Because I will connect you to those. And it was amazing. I don't know where I was going to go with that. That's what I'm saying with that.
You're doing amazing, because I feel like, and when you said that there's just a huge population in Washington, you know, of people with mental illness, that makes me think of here in Chicago. Here in the past couple of years that I've been here, and again, I take transit. So usually when I'm coming home from work, I come home at night because I work second shift as a case manager. And so what I'll see is, you know, people on the train, and it'll be literally like kids as young as, I'm guessing 18. I'm hoping not younger than 18, because that'd definitely give me some worries about like what their parents are doing.
Right.
Neither here nor there. But you know, I see these kids and I can definitely tell that they are, in my mind, I think of them as, you know, potential like DCFS kids that have aged out of the system, because I've actually heard some stories of, you know, like when the kids age out of the system, DCFS, the Department of Child and Family Services, they, you know, are left with no money because nobody, you know, has ever really taught them about like money management, how to get an apartment, how to get a job. And it's just frustrating to me because, you know, I feel like, you know, with that education, you see what I'm saying, maybe we wouldn't see, you know, as much of, you know, these kids like on the train. And the way that I can tell, you know, them apart from everybody else is that they're wearing, you know, these amazing clothes, some clothes that I can't even afford. You see what I'm saying? And it's like, I feel like, you know, and again, whether or not this is fact, you know, just in kind of like my experience, what I feel like is they're spending all of their money on all of these nice things, but they're not thinking about the long term, because nobody really has ever taught them to think about the long term. And so it just definitely is interesting to see how it's interesting to see how you're giving an example of another major city, Seattle, you know, with this comorbidity with homelessness and mental health. You know, and it's amazing just to see that. And, you know, just to see that, you know, Chicago or like other big cities, you know what I mean? They can definitely relate. You know what I mean? And it's amazing to kind of see how you are going through these things as well. But it kind of seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, kind of seems to me like you have like a better handle. Or when I say better handle, I mean like, you know, maybe you have like more resources and supports than some of these kids. And can you kind of tell us about some of those resources and supports that you may already have or may, you know, advocate for or may want to acquire? Can you give us some of those resources and supports?
I would agree that I am fortunate to have access to a bunch of different resources. For one, my doctor in Seattle is amazing. So I go through, they're a local like chain of doctor's offices in Seattle. They're called Neighbor Care Health.
Okay.
And so my doctor is the resource king. Any question I ever have, he knows. He knows a place. He knows a guy type thing. And so it feels very, almost, you know, I'm half Italian too, so it feels very mobbish of like, I know a guy, I can take care of you here. Like, we got you, you know? So it's fun, but yeah, so he has been amazing in connecting to me, all different resources and stuff. With mental health, like I said, I have gone through a lot of therapists, but it has also been pretty easy for me to get a therapist. Or get information on how to get a therapist. Something that was really great when I first started going into therapy 10 years ago was that I was connected with a social worker who helped me fill out the paperwork to get the state insurance. And the great thing about state insurance when you don't make that much money is a lot of your doctor's visits and medications are paid for by the insurance. So it's not as much of a financial burden to go on to those mental health meds for me currently, which unfortunately, a lot of mental health meds are extremely expensive. We're looking at $1,000 a month for just one medication. And I'm currently on 4 medications. So definitely state insurance has saved me so much. But also even just in my community, so I'm an avid roller skater, and just even through the Derby community, I've met a lot of people who work in all sorts of different fields. And so just kind of life networking has helped me to be able to get a hold of resources and just know which offices to go to for therapy, for my doctor's office, and for anything else that I need.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know that's actually something that I definitely want to advocate with my platform, is the access to the supports and those resources, because I think that just in general, there definitely could be more education on what types of supports and resources that are available to us. Obviously, I feel like it varies depending on state, you know, on the states.
Yeah.
So what happens in Washington as far as like the funding may be completely different from Illinois, but I feel like whatever resources and supports that, you know, each state has, I definitely think that it could be emphasized a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, and especially for, again, some of these kids that I see on the train. Particularly like the Red Line, the CTA Red Line. It runs, you know, north to south. It connects the, you know, the north side of Chicago to the south side of Chicago. So, you know, and with that being said, you know, it runs downtown, you know, so that's where I see a lot of traffic as far as like with, you know, homeless people. And, you know, again, you see that comorbidity with mental illness. You know, you'll definitely, you know, picture people like, you know, responding to auditory hallucinations or what people like to call, you know, voices in their head, you know, or, you know, like visual hallucinations, seeing things that aren't there. And, you know, I feel like there definitely needs to be some more education that needs to occur, you know, just, I guess, nationwide, you know. So, and it's definitely interesting to kind of know that even in the role that you play, again, like as a comedian, you know, how you're able to manage, you know, your time with being a comedian, but also managing your time with, you know, having, you know, mental illness. I know that I talked to you a little bit earlier about myself. I actually have been taking medication for my anxiety, my generalized anxiety disorder. And so I definitely know that it is very, it definitely is very interesting to kind of see how I'm able to, you know, cope with that, but also, you know, with my busy schedule, because, you know, as I talked to you before, you know, I go to school, I go to the Illinois Media School. And so, you know, with that, with school in general, and also having to work and, you know, pay my bills and stuff like that, and just dealing with, you know, just my own personal mental illness, it's just, you know, I feel like that gives me more energy and more determination to advocate for, you know, the field that I'm working in. So it definitely is great to hear how, you know, people are able to, and I mean, I have to pat myself on the back too, you know, like people are able to manage their mental illness and still be the individual that they're trying to set out to be,
right.
You know, so kudos to you, kudos, because I feel like just more people need to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, now, I guess kind of, I guess like, you know, kind of trying to redirect the conversation, with everything that we talked about during our mingling efforts, what can you tell my fellow minglers about, as far as like with personal growth? What kind of advice, what kind of education would you give towards my fellow minglers?
I would say to always be open to learning more about yourself, and don't just assume that the way you are is going to always be the way that you are. There's definitely some core aspects of a person's personality that mostly won't change over time. But things like where you're living, or, you know, maybe the doctors that you're currently seeing, or, you know, if whether or not you're in school or where you're working, like all of those things you can change. You have the power to change. If you're not happy with something, like, speak up and say that you're not. Because I would say that that's has been a big important part of my personal growth, is admitting to myself, you know, I'm not happy with this, and how can I move forward, and what can I do to get out of this situation? So, you know, just kind of being brave and building up that confidence to want to and to be able to change your current situation. And just not, if you are dealing with mental illness, to not feel like it has to define everything, even when it feels like it defines everything.
That is amazing. And I can definitely relate to that. I know for me, something that I've always struggled with is settling. And I feel like it just goes along with how I was brought up, because I think I talked to you a little bit earlier about how, you know, my mom, she immigrated from Jamaica. So when she first came to the States, you know, she didn't have anything, you know, and shortly before she migrated to the States, she had me, you know, and then she started, you know, having my brothers and sister. And so I definitely, with growing up in the household, that I was brought up in, it definitely, I guess, conditioned me to settle, you know, and kind of think like something's better than nothing, you know, because I didn't have a lot. And so I tell people that, you know, with me not having a lot, I definitely have had to do a lot of settling, you know, over the course of my life. And now, you know, in my mid-20s, I'm starting to realize that I don't have to settle.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to be handed this bag of lemons that obviously has like rotten spots. You know what I mean? I could just take it back to the store, right? Or, you know, exchange them for either another bag of lemons or, you know, a better type of fruit. You see what I'm saying? And
right.
I feel like that's something that I've always forgotten. So it definitely is encouraging to hear, you know, from, you know, someone in like a similar boat as me. It definitely is great to hear that, you know, you don't have to settle. And I feel like that's something that I definitely want to communicate with, you know, my masses that are listening.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Ambrose. Do you have any final remarks for me? Or for my fellow minglers?
I don't think so.
I mean, and I was going to say, you know, do you have any other bits and pieces of advice or anything that you can share? You know, so where can my fellow minglers find you? Do you have any types of social media? Where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, sure. So on, you can find me on YouTube and TikTok for the most part. That is where I post all of my comedy stuff, material. And so my YouTube channel is called Prince Transarella, the Informative Fella.
I love it.
And my TikTok actually is Prince Trazarella. For some odd reason, TikTok not allow me to say the word trans in my username. Don't know why, but so it's basically Prince Transarella without the N.
We're gonna have to do some investigation, fellow minglers.
So I don't know why. I tried all sorts of different spellings and it just wouldn't allow it. And then also my Instagram is Prince Transarella 91.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Amazing. And so of course my fellow minglers that are listening, so what we're going to do is we're definitely going to shout your information out on my, it'll be in the description of the episode. So, you know, definitely follow Ambrose. He is amazing. He's been amazing. I mean, shoot, throughout this whole entire mingle session. Yes. And what, I guess, like, kind of, you know, winding down to my final thoughts, what information can you give to anybody that's trying to pursue, you know, whether it be a career or whether it be a hobby and, you know, being a comedian? What kind of bits and pieces of advice can you give to us?
I would say, you know, while you're writing, you know, if you want to get into comedy, while you're writing jokes, always be willing to just try the joke. Even if you don't get a laugh, that is still a positive experience, because then you at least learned, okay, that wasn't funny. And even, you know, after you finish your set and at the end, you know, during that networking period, you can ask people and they will tell you. You can ask them, hey, did you find this funny, or where did I lose you? You know, and being able to step outside of yourself and be humble enough, but also to not let no laughs harm your ego. You know, like, it's because it is a very, it's a very stressful and disappointing experience when you think you put together like this amazing joke and then it doesn't land. So don't be afraid to not have your jokes land.
Yeah.
So just always try the joke.
Awesome. And do you have any upcoming events?
So when I go back home, I will be doing my weekly open mic nights that I do at the roller skating rink, is where I actually do the derby practices at. So,
awesome.
Yeah. So
all of my Seattle minglers, okay, go ahead.
Southgate Roller Rink.
Yes, Southgate Roller Rink. You better show up if you want to have a good laugh, a good time. And there better be food, too. Is there food?
Yeah, there's food. They do like pizza and pretzels and nachos and like stuff like that. So
I was going to say, because
it's like rank food, but
you can't laugh on an empty stomach. I mean, at least I can. So.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ambrose. You have been amazing. Thank you so much for mingling with me and motivating the masses.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes. And so again, my fellow minglers, please follow Ambrose on the socials, which will be in the description below. Thank you guys so much for mingling with me and Ambrose. And we will see you guys later. Ciao for now. Also, don't forget to tune into previous episodes of Mornings with Mino on my YouTube channel, Mingling with Mino in all capital letters. New episodes will be coming soon to continue my efforts in mingling with and motivating the masses in the morning.